Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. I bet you get 30, 30, I bet you get 30, I bet you get 20, 20, 20, I bet you get 20, 20, I bet you get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month, sold.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Planning for your next trip? Elevate your travel style with Quince. Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.
I'm Kate Thornton. Join me every week on White Wine Question Time, the podcast that asks famous faces three thought-provoking questions over three glasses of wine.
It's very rare to be introduced with such a thorough introduction, and it's kind of lovely to listen to all that and go, yeah, I've had a good life, right?
You really have.
How did you find that?
I can't even remember.
Yeah.
You do your research, Kate, man. I'll tell you that.
Do you know what? You are the only person ever, no other journalist has ever made that connection.
Wow, what a great question.
And receives some truly memorable answers.
And Tom Cruise came, and Nicole Kidman. I go to him, listen, before you go, Tom, I just want you to know, if you fancy a foursome, I'm up for it, and I know Anne-Marie doesn't mind.
When I first dated my now husband, I joined a gym for, I'm going to say, £1,000 a year, just so I could go off and have a poo.
Actually, I got heckled once in Wales, and there was a bloke at the bar on crutches, and he actually said to me, I'd rather fall over than listen to this shit, and he threw his crutches at me and fell over. Can you believe that?
I've got some cat's ashes, I don't know who they are.
You've been catfished by your own cat.
Exactly, seriously, man.
Dad, have you thought about putting in a breakfast nook? And my dad would say something like, have you thought about getting your own fucking house?
How did you give a duck an orgasm, Craig?
It's good with them, you know. I know my way around a duck.
So, if you fancy a sit-down with the likes of Adam Hills, Tom Allen, Hannah Waddingham, Phil Tufnell, James Acaster and Ed Gamble, Daisy May Cooper, and tons more, then join me every Tuesday and Friday. Search White Wine Question Time in your podcast app to subscribe and listen now. White Wine Question Time is a Stack production.
Welcome to another edition of On the Continent, your one-stop shop for everything to do with European football. I'm Dotton Adebayo.
I'm Andy Brassel.
And I'm David Cartledge.
On today's edition, in Spain, some people reckon Real Madrid got beaten in the first leg of their heavyweight Champions League draw against PSG by one of their own. Question is, what's Kylian Mbappe got to do with it? Elsewhere, football's next generation of coaches did battle in Austria. Can Julian Nagelsmann sort out Bayern's niggling problems? And 5-0, that's the sound of the police. 5-0, that's the sound of the beast. But in Lisboa, that's the sound of Man City banging them in to add insult to a week in which Sporting were already badly wounded. Shall we start and kick off today, gentlemen, by talking about the Mbappe show? Did you see that the other night?
Might have done.
Yeah. Might have done, indeed. Yeah, he's the matinee idol as PSG took on Real Madrid. 1-0, though. David, was that a fair outcome for this?
I think it probably was fair in the end. I think PSG certainly deserved to win. I think they did enough in terms of their attack and intent. I thought they took ownership of the game straight away. When you think about, I mean, Courtois made some good saves, but I wouldn't say in the second half that PSG really broke the door down. I think the Neymar sub kind of lifted them a little bit. It got the crowd up. It got everybody else just a bit more, you know, excited, shall we say. It got them back pressing. It got them back playing a bit more with a bit more intensity. And then I think Mbappe was always threatening throughout the game to do something individual. And he went and did that. And it was the mark of an elite player. Quite frankly.
It was, wasn't it? Yeah. Because I think the way that Real Madrid played, for which have been roundly criticised in a lot of places, I think it was quite logical. A, in the way that Real Madrid are nowadays, in that, as we've discussed, they're more Atletico than Atletico are, because Atletico aren't Atletico anymore, particularly if you saw the loss to Levante, which came before last night's Champions League games. But the other thing is, however Real Madrid want to play, if you've got Mbappe and Di Maria on the other team, you're not going to defend on the halfway line unless you're completely stupid. You know. And what was so impressive, really, about Mbappe's performance, Real Madrid were happy for the whole game to defend their own penalty box in that way that Atletico used to be. Like, not defend their own half, defend their own box. And you're taking over one of the main Mbappe weapons, because one of the most exhilarating sights in football is watching him stream away from the defence. How can you, if they're all in front of you? So he's got to find a different way to do it. And he did find a different way to do it.
Amazing way he found to do it. I'm not quite sure how he found that way, to be honest.
That's the thing. Like, Neymar's had credit, and as David says, quite rightly, he did lift the crowd, but he's had credit for the back heel that gives the ball to Mbappe in the first place. But it's not anywhere approaching a chance at the point that he gets the ball. But there's this great bit when he sees the moment to go between Lucas Vazquez and Eder Militao, and he just goes between the two of them, and Militao lifts his hands to say, I can't do anything here, to say, I can't touch him. And actually, the bit where Carvajal, wasn't it, before Vazquez gave away the penalty, that is still living in Madrid minds then, because they're thinking, if he goes outside, we can't touch him. If he goes inside, we can't touch him. They don't dare go anywhere near him.
It's too fast for them. It's too fast.
He's too fast. He's too agile. His feet are absolutely incredible. Now, I think he understands that even with the smallest space, his skill set, he can conjure something out of nothing.
It's scary.
And it is the mark of a true, true top player. Only the very best players do that. You won't get an average player producing a moment of genius like that. And that is why he is that good right now.
But the clarity of thought as well.
Yeah.
Because normally, if you interview a player afterwards, our friend Miguel Delaney pointed this out, when Mbappe came out to talk to the media afterwards, in the mix zone, normally a player goes, well, you know, I was just happy to contribute for the team.
Yes,
I just saw the chance and I took it, whatever. He explained exactly what went through his mind. And that's the amazing thing. Mm-hmm. It's not just instinctive. He plotted it. He plotted every single bit of it. It's amazing.
Yeah, he's a quick thinker. I haven't figured out how he did that, David. I've watched that goal over and over and over again. I get the point that Andy makes that the other defenders are afraid, particularly as they've already given away a penalty. However, I don't know how any youngster watching that is going to be able to replicate it.
They'll be trying.
Of course,
they'll be trying.
Listen, I was George Best. I tried when I was a kid.
Yeah.
But on a real tip, can you explain it? How he got through that? Because he's got three defenders around him, and this he's coming in from the left at three defenders, so the angle is narrow, and you think the only thing he can do is pass backwards, or at least alongside him, but he manages to find the one possible what would they say, you know, eye of the needle,
to thread
his way through. And it was fine margins, 1 centimetre here or there, and he wouldn't have succeeded. How on earth does somebody do that? And when Andy says he had to think about it as well, then you think, no. So it wasn't luck?
He processes things extremely, extremely quick. You look at the way he analyses things on the field, I think, in the areas that he knows where to target. And I think that's where it is. I think he's extremely, extremely smart anyway. But also, he has that now. I mean, the finish was ruthless. It really, really was. It was brutal, the finish. We talked about the move before, but the finish was ruthless as well. And I think that's where he's got right now. It's just a lot of instinct to do these things just right in an instant. He thinks about them and then he does them, rather than second guessing himself and going, oh, should I maybe go this way? He knows straight away what he wants to do.
And he stuck to a particular area of the pitch. I mean, yeah. Carvajal received a bit of criticism for his performance, which I thought was a little unfair because there simply wasn't the cover.
I was going to say, he gets a lot of this, but yeah, if the cover isn't there, then I'm not too sure. I was really surprised that they left it for so long because Carvajal's form has been, anyway, even in isolation, poor by his previous standards. And for somebody who's, I think he's 30 now, he looks like somebody who's playing about 35, 36. He looks really like a man who's played like a lot of football, had injuries and such like that. And I think it's really, really grinded on him. And he's never, also, we discussed this before we came on air. Real Madrid, they haven't really compensated for these players either, because they've let Modric perhaps play more football than he should have, and Carvajal's another one. Not really had a proper replacement, proper cover to help prolong their career at a high level.
No, that's it. And I think when Vasquez comes on, you almost wonder if Vasquez needs to come on to help Carvajal rather than replace him. Maybe that would have been the play, because I think the big thing about this, and actually before we get to Real Madrid, I think we should discuss Mbappe, because A, it's good to discuss him more, and B, discuss the Madrid reaction, the Madrid media's reaction.
This is amazing. Was it you that tweeted this about the reaction of the Madrid media saying he's one of our own anyway?
Yeah,
he's one of our own.
Yeah, all the covers of the big Madrid sports papers like Marca or AS are like, this guy's amazing. Not Real Madrid play terribly or we're in danger of going out of the Champions League, more this guy's going to be ours next season. Yeah. And there was one editorial describing him as the best signing in the history of the club. Of course, he hasn't actually inked it yet. And I do wonder, if you're Kylian Mbappe, clearly Paris Saint-Germain aren't going to give up on re-signing him until the moment has actually gone. Now, there have been reports that Real Madrid have already signed him for next season. Unconfirmed. I don't think the money will sway his mind, but I think this game is the best argument that PSG have got, because it's at least we're moving in a direction. At least we have a plan. Real Madrid, you're going there to a team that, okay, you're going to make a massive difference to it, but you make a massive difference to any team. There are so many other areas of that team that are in flux. And you look particularly at that midfield that's been wonderful over the years, but basically immobile now. Yeah. He's shown up to be immobile in this game.
Yeah, absolutely. And if you look at PSG and their recruitment really, really recently, you'd say they've got Hakimi, they've got Nuno Mendes, they're starting to build, get exciting young players. It's, they're kind of moving away a little bit from just having superstars, just getting the big names. They're building, and it feels like they're building something that can go around Mbappe. I think Real Madrid's probably got a lot more catching up to do in that sense. They've got some good young players, don't get me wrong. But I think PSG are in a really nice position to say to Mbappe, honestly, where's better right now than here? They, you know, I mean, there's only Real Madrid that's been mentioned for Mbappe. So it doesn't sound like a Manchester City or whoever is even a possibility. But PSG, I think, can probably be confident in their own ability. And look, I mean, they shouldn't need to audition or show Mbappe what they have. They've already got a lot, and they can go far in this competition with him at that level.
And also, Mbappe shouldn't be auditioning for the role either, should he? He should
on
be
on either side.
It's his team. It's his city. It's exactly where, you know, everything should be his. It's his kingdom.
Exactly, and he shouldn't be having to say, "My name is." Slim Shady, because they've got Eminem at PSG, so Mbappe is one half of the M, the other half surely is Messi. And in terms of Eminem, I would rather have just had an M, because the other M wasn't at the races.
You know what? I didn't know where you were going with that, but I applaud you.
Thank you very much. I worked hard. And also, thanks to the Super Bowl, of course, that reminded me that my name is, how has Messi's impact? This is from APJ 1989. And we always welcome your tweets, by the way, and your contact by social media, your questions. How has Messi's impact or lack thereof been viewed in Paris? And if Mbappe, the other Eminem, is on his way, who do PSG sign?
Well, they can't get a like-for-like replacement for him. And like I said, they're not at the point yet where they're willing to accept that he'll actually go.
Are they deluding themselves?
Maybe. I think they, in terms of due diligence, they owe it to themselves to believe that he will stay until the moment that it's absolutely official that he doesn't. From a public relations point of view, as much as anything else, because as you say, you know, he is the one with the future. If they're left with just, and we've said it time and again on this show this season, if they're left with just Neymar and Messi, it sounds ridiculous when you think of the names. I don't think that's that pretty. I think that's a lot of wages for, you know, declining forces now, and that's where they are. Clearly, you know that Neymar can't get through the entire season. No one's saying, well, people are saying, I'm not saying that it's his fault. And then Messi, who, I don't know if I've ever seen a performance in a top-level Champions League game between two such big clubs that's divided opinion so much. Because there have been the defenders of Messi who will say that, you know, he's aging, but aging in an acceptable way.
Gracefully.
Yeah. And there are others who will say, is this all that PSG are getting? I think there's a little bit of both there. I think clearly you can see his age now. But then again, if you go back to... Go back 7 years, go back to the 2015 final where Barcelona won it last. And the point that Messi is picking up the ball there is in the centre circle. That is the point where he's getting it. He's just got two amazing runners in front of him in young Neymar and younger Luis Suarez, who are the players who are meant to allege the impact of him getting older and having a lot of miles on the clock. Now, this is why Messi plus Mbappe or Neymar plus Mbappe makes sense, but not the three of them, which is the difficulty. I actually thought, in terms of progressing the ball, Messi did a pretty good job. I think you look at the incisive passes played out to either side, they all come from him. The passing's going in the right direction. There's no sideways. But
what about the end product? When you look at Messi or any great player like that, you're thinking, great, you're a great passer. And that's, you know, a lot of people can pass the ball, but it's your end product that makes a difference. And in that respect, he let the side and himself down on two critical...
Has Leonardo, in building the team that he has or building the unfinished team / squad that he has, let him down? I would argue that is more the case, because if you look at, take away Verratti, midfielders are all much of a muchness. You know, there are a lot of midfielders at PSG that do the same thing. They're heading into that Juventus zone, really. So then you need Messi to go through the gears, to cover the ground, which is difficult. I think it's especially difficult against the packed defence. And the thing that we keep forgetting to talk about with Messi when we're talking about how he's had a limited impact this season, he has had a limited impact this season. Not just that he's adapting to France, and it is tough adapting to being kicked a lot more, especially when you're not fast enough to get away from it anymore. He hasn't had a pre-season. I mean, I don't think you can judge Messi at PSG until he has a pre-season. What player in football history can have no pre-season and come and totally smash it?
It does look as if he hasn't had a pre-season as well. There were moments when you looked and thought, I mean, the crucial moment with regards to Messi was a free kick and a penalty both missed. I mean, you don't miss a free kick, but you know what I mean. What struck me about the penalty... And it's sad because, you know, we've all loved this player and we've seen what he can do. What struck me about the penalty, it was saved. The old Messi would have anticipated it possibly being saved, would have been halfway down towards the goal mouth and caught the... Because the keeper basically diverted it to his left. He would have caught it before it went out of touch and probably banged it in again.
Yeah.
But this was a Messi...
Because I think Messi is simply not a good penalty taker.
No. I don't think he's a good one. Don't get me wrong, also, I had my issues with him in that game. I thought he was very laboured. I agree with you. I thought he was really laboured. I thought a lot of his touches were very, very heavy. I thought he got surrounded quickly and held onto the ball for far too long at times. So I was very disappointed with him. But I'd agree with Andy on the penalty, just not on the actual overall performance.
And we can't forget, of course, Thibaut Courtois has got an argument for being the best goalkeeper in the world at the moment.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, Donnarumma had nothing fantastic. To do.
No. So maybe we can't tell him that head to head. No.
You never know. There is a bigger question we should address now, and that is, where do PSG go from here? Not just in terms of the Champions League, you know, the next half, if you like, of this tie against Real Madrid, but I'm looking at Pochettino there. I'm looking at Mauricio Pochettino. I'm thinking, where does he go from here? He was, you know, unveiled with such... you know, pomp and ceremony, but here he does seem to be something of a lost man. Did he have any impact on this game?
I think he made a big impact on the way they played, and I think particularly bearing in mind that Real Madrid, as he knew they would, were gonna sit deep. The patience that he gave the team, the changes that he made at the right time. I think this was one of the best PSG performances under Poch.
Yeah.
On the other hand. Whenever I see Di Maria in the team, and Di Maria didn't have the impact that he would have wanted, partially because Real Madrid sat so deep, I think you look back 5 years and you look at when PSG beat Barcelona 4-0 at Camp Nou, and that was perfection under Unai Emery. And then they go to Camp Nou and we know what the rest is, you know. So, you know, there's no suggestion that Real Madrid can necessarily do that to PSG, although I wouldn't rule them out of this tie. But I would just say that one calling card of a European performance does not make a legacy.
What happens to Pochettino, though? They're already question marks about his departure from PSG. And it does seem as if Mbappe, because he's the guy that's worked with him over the last couple of years or so, it does seem as if Mbappe's departure, at least this is one of the narratives, Mbappe's departure, if he goes to Real Madrid, all of this is speculation, will hasten the departure of Pochettino from PSG as well.
I think unless there's some major turnaround and everybody comes together and unifies a PSG, and sometimes a run in the Champions League can do that sort of thing, then I don't see any other thing than Pochettino leaving and probably ended up in Manchester. I really, honestly, I feel so confident of that happening.
Do both Mbappe and Pochettino end up in Madrid? I wonder if that's a question.
I will say that this game, this tie so far, has kind of put a spanner in the works. I was quite sure that he was probably going to go to Real Madrid, but I don't know. The noise seem to be. There seems to be more noise about him staying now, and I wouldn't be as surprised if he stayed now. Let's put it that way.
And somebody please tell Carlo Ancelotti.
Griezmann sur l'appui, c'était bien joué avec Giroud.
Oh, Sylvain! Oh, Sylvain, il l'a vu! Oui. Kylian Mbappé! Ouais! Kylian Mbappé, il l'a vu! Ça fait 4 et ça fait peut-être un quart de finale pour l'équipe de France. 68e minute.
Of course, there were other Champions League ties. So one that caught my eye, just because it didn't look like... I had to sort of like take a second look at this one, was in the tie between Bayern and the Austrian team Salzburg. They got a draw against Bayern Munich. How do they do that?
Well...
No disrespect to Salzburg, but, you know, we're talking about a team that knows its Champions League, recent Champions League, very, very well. And the team is very much intact as well.
Yeah. I mean, but before we get on to Salzburg, actually, because I know David really wants to speak about them, and I thought they were great. Bayern have got a bit of an issue at the moment, and there is a growing belief in Germany that the team as is cannot win the Champions League, which I think is quite interesting. Now, they came on into the back of this off losing 4-2 at Bochum at the weekend. First time they conceded 4 goals in a first half since November 1975. Just in case you needed underlining like where their defensive problems are, Hasan Salihamidžić, the sporting director, was interviewed on television before this game against Salzburg, and it was put to him what people had been saying about the defence. He was asked about what Lothar Matthäus's words about it, and he said, "I don't give a damn what Lothar thinks." So he's obviously a bit piqued, even though Matthäus is not short of a prickly opinion or two. It is interesting. They did a big article about it in Kicker this week, and they asked Jerome Boateng, who of course was one of those players who moved on from that. He talked about creating relationships, and I think that's absolutely true when it comes to the defence. Dio Upamecano, who had a really bad game at the weekend at Bochum, he was dropped for this game.
I saw that Bochum one, and that was more shocking if you think about the result.
Totally. And I think no more than the moment when Christian Gamboa, of course West Brom Albion fans might remember him from a short spell there, scored his first Bundesliga goal from right back when he nutmegged Kingsley Coman and then smashed it in the top corner. Really, it was brilliant. Yeah. And Bochum were great, we have to say that. But the way in which they defended in a lot of this game against Salzburg, they were lucky that Salzburg didn't take a few of their chances, particularly in the first hour. It was all just a bit slow, a bit lackadaisical. You feel that relationship between, that renewed relationship between Pavard and Zule isn't quite there as well. So they've got issues, but I think it's a shape issue, really. They went into the game against Bochum at the weekend with one attacking player too many, but basically playing Thomas Müller in a kind of central midfield role. Bad idea. It left them open. It leaves that defence open. And then what do? They come into this game with exactly the same front part of the team. We know they've got lots of incredible talent. That doesn't mean they should all play at the same time.
Yeah. I mean, for me, there was only one player who played well for Bayern, and that was Kingsley Coman. I thought he was outstanding. And what I liked, we'll get into Salzburg in a minute, but I want to give Coman his credit, because I think there's a kind of stigma around a lot of wingers that, you know, that they wait for the game to come to them. Mm. They'll stay out wide. They'll watch the game pass them by, wait for the ball.
There is some truth in this,
yeah,
obviously.
They'll put their hands on the hips. They'll throw their arms out. Why am I not getting the ball? Come on, I'm this good. He grafted every time that Bayern lost the ball. He went to try and get it back.
He worked for that goal, didn't he?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. When he was in the corners, he was trying to beat somebody 1-on-1. Maybe he wasn't successful, but he chased the man who he lost the ball to. His attitude was excellent throughout the game, and it wasn't a surprise to me, again, that he engineered that goal himself. Mm. Not as beautiful as Mbappe's individual bit of brilliance, but it was of a different sort, just a graft, desire, and I really admired that from him. So he was great. And then, speaking about Müller, he was just, don't get me wrong, the whole Bayern team, I think, were caught a deer in the headlights by the energy, the personality that Salzburg came out with.
Personality is a good word in this,
the
I think.
Opening 20, 25 minutes was brilliant, but I think Müller was just standing, almost just watching just the game going by, as if you're watching a ball going left or right on a tennis court. He was just watching the game go by. This brilliant just whirlwind of a team in Salzburg, the way that they started. I think maybe a lack of composure, inexperience showed when it came to the final third at times. There was a couple of good chances that they had. They probably should have finished off. There was one when Pavard cleared it off the line as well at 1-0. And then I think about
that 10 was from Adamu, wasn't it? In the second half, yeah.
And about 10 minutes later, that is when Coman equalised. So in the sense that people don't think that Bayern will win this competition, I can see that. Because can you imagine if Mbappe is left up against that Bayern defence, he will absolutely maul them to finish the league. All he needs to do is create a half a yard and then boom, his finishing. Mm. Unfortunately, the Salzburg finishing wasn't quite up there, but take nothing away. They were fantastic. They really, really were. There was a few individual performances I thought were really good, but as a unit, they all work for each other. A lot of the talk these days is on Adeyemi. Don't get me wrong. Mm. Brilliant. He really is a fantastic player. But Camara in midfield from Mali, what a player he is. And you can just see, look, we've seen some brilliant African midfielders in Europe, and he is clearly primed to be the next one
to come over here. Yeah. That's what I think he's primed for.
And you know there are a lot of big teams in Europe who are lacking that holder at the moment.
Oh, 100%. Mm-hmm. He's got a really nice balanced skill set, and don't get me wrong, he's a different type of player to the player that I'm going to mention, but he has the similar traits of being combative and physical, but also very composed, but very efficient on the ball. And I'd compare him to Yaya Toure in that sense.
Oh.
Now, he's a different type of midfielder,
yeah,
but they've got very, very similar skill sets, I think, the way that they use the ball and they balance their skill sets. And he was fantastic. He was winning the ball back. Every 50-50 he was winning, but he was also distributing really well. And the goal came from his long ball that started a very quick counter-attack that was about... He just played a long ball over the top, cut out Bayern's midfield entirely and gave Adeyemi a one-on-one situation. Which is what you want him in. So yeah, he's going to be one to watch in the next few years. And I said, Andy, oh, 2-3 years, you're probably at a big club. And Andy's like, might be sooner than that.
Indeed.
I wasn't on the phone to anyone at the time.
But, so, no. Just letting you know. But the Bayern players would have taken a close look at him. What's going to happen in the next leg between these two teams?
I think Bayern have got some stuff to iron out. Now, they usually do iron it out. What's been interesting is the talk recently that it's all been a little bit too happy under Nagelsmann. He's a very holistic approach to coaching, as we know. And, you know, there are some old voices around Bayern, you know, those that aren't in the boardroom anymore, like Hoeneß and Rummenigge, who are like, well, it's not really the way we do things. It's a culture of debate, by which they mean constant argument, you know, and that is how stuff gets done. That's how the status quo gets challenged. And, you know, there's a feeling that maybe a bit of friction is needed to get past some of those things. But Salzburg aren't out of this at all, particularly given that, you know, I think it's easy to look at the game and say, well, they conceded the goal in the 90th minute, therefore they lost a golden opportunity to beat Bayern. I don't really look at it that way. I think David was talking about it. How much energy they expended in the first hour of that game. They were hanging on for a long, long time. And I think to get out of it with a draw, given how the last half hour went, it's actually fine. Camara is a huge part of that. If you haven't got him sitting in front of the defence, they get absolutely overrun in that last half hour when they can't run anymore. But what they can do, Bayern is still going to have a high line in 3 weeks' time. They go to Munich. Adeyemi, who looks like he's going to sign for Dortmund in the summer, so, you know, he's going to have some battles with Bayern going down the line. You look at him, if they can get Okafor fit again, because, of course, Adamu came on early for Okafor. It's a really terrific link normally between Okafor and Adeyemi. They've got the pace and they've got the intelligence to get at them. Brendan Aaronson, who was great in that first hour, he can pick out the passes as well. Of course, Leeds United wanted him in winter. There's plenty of ways for them to get at Bayern. And what, of course, they don't have is, we've had a lot of chat this week about the away goal. The away goal thing's not weighing on them. If it's still 0-0, there's never going to be a point where they're like, shit, we've got to take some risks and score a goal. No, you don't. You know, they can, I think, play the game at more of a manageable pace in Munich, maybe, by you know, letting Bayern have the ball and counter-attacking naturally.
Yeah, just for those who aren't aware of the reference to the away goal, it's not in this round, it's not applicable. So
no, it's going to be a fair fight. Knockouts going forward, yeah.
Yeah, it's going to be a fair fight, so to speak.
Real Madrid were very aware of it.
A little.
But, you know, really impressive display amongst other things as well by the Salzburg coach, amongst others. And I think one of the issues when you look at this is maybe we underestimate teams coming from Austria. I get the fact sometimes, with the exception of PSG and maybe Lyon and maybe Lille in France, you know that the French league ain't up to that. But those three teams lift it. And not just, you know, I could have added Marseille and maybe Nice.
But you don't have to. Don't feel you have to.
No, let's add five. Let's throw big five. I don't know who those equivalents are in Austria, but we don't respect that league as much. And here's a team coming out, taking on the, you know, arguably a couple of years ago, at least, the best team in the world, and holding them to a draw.
I think it's happened for several years, because I think Shakhtar had a similar situation a few years ago. When they were so good in Europe, when they first came to the fore. So I think people were so used to seeing Dinamo Kiev. And the fact that Shakhtar came through, they had a few Brazilians in their squad and such, and I think they'd always played an exciting brand of football. I think they shocked a lot of people as well. I think a lot of big clubs underestimated them when they first came through in Europe. And every now and then, this does happen. Mm. It happened, funnily enough, with Kiev as well. I remember Kiev in the 90s with Rebrov and Shevchenko.
Yeah.
They had an incredible tie. I think it was against Bayern, actually.
Yeah, it was, yeah.
Yeah, and they really, really rattled Bayern. And I think they were underestimated. I remember there was a lot of disparaging things I think said about Kiev before, and this is a great example that you just write it off because they're not from one of the major leagues. I think even Bayern would probably take a club from Portugal more seriously, but when you come from Austria, if you come from Ukraine, you're perhaps not taken seriously. But if you've got a few individuals who can spin a game on its head like Salzburg have, then you shouldn't underestimate.
I think you look at the model as well with both. Of course, there's slightly different models between Shakhtar, as you mentioned, and Salzburg. Really saying that they're an Austrian league team or a Ukrainian league team is kind of missing the point. They're in a bubble of their own because of the way they run things so much differently. So with Shakhtar, of course, it was the investment in a certain type of player and a certain type of philosophy. This is about philosophy as well, what Salzburg are doing and what they've been doing for years. Now, of course, they went years and years and years continually flunking the exam to get in the group stage of the Champions League. There were 7-8 years in a row where they went out in the playoff round. And then when Oscar Garcia was the coach there, he was given the brief of, from now on, we're going to be doing it just with young players. So we'll leave that with you. Now, in the short term, that was complicated for him. But we know what the Red Bull Group has in terms of facilities, in terms of the way they use money, in terms of the type of players they buy in terms of the sports science and the coaching that they employ. That's why you go a couple of years back and you've got Haaland, Patson Daka, et cetera, et cetera. Go even further back, you've got Sadio Mane, haven't you? Although that's a slightly different case. And then you sort of come to this, and, you know, the amount of players that Salzburg have lost in the last couple of years, on paper, they should not be able to challenge Bayern. But their process is so good that the next cab off the rank's always coming.
Yep.
And thank you both for discussing Ukraine without any reference to Moscow. Thank you.
In Champions frente a Lille. Esta puede ser buena. Adeyemi! Golazo!
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
I'm Kate Thornton. Join me every week on White Wine Question Time, the podcast that asks famous faces three thought-provoking questions over three glasses of wine.
It's very rare to be introduced with such a thorough introduction, and it's kind of lovely to listen to all that and go, yeah, I've had a good life, right?
You really have.
How did you find that?
I can't even remember. Yeah, you do your research, Kate, man. I'll tell you that.
Do you know what? You are the only person ever, no other journalist has ever made that connection.
Wow, what a great question.
And receives some truly memorable answers.
And Tom Cruise came, and Nicole Kidman. I go to him, listen, before you go, Tom, I just want you to know, if you fancy a foursome, I'm up for it, and I know Anne-Marie doesn't mind.
When I first dated my now husband, I joined a gym for, I'm going to say, £1,000 a year, just so I could go off and have a poo.
Actually, I got heckled once in Wales, and there was a bloke at the bar on crutches, and he actually said to me, I'd rather fall over than listen to this shit, and he threw his crutches at me and fell over. Can you believe that?
I've got some cat's ashes, I don't know who they are.
You've been catfished by your own cat.
Exactly, seriously, man.
Dad, have you thought about putting in a breakfast nook? And my dad would say something like that. Have you thought about getting your own fucking house?
How did you give a duck an orgasm, Craig?
It's good with them, you know. I know my way around a duck.
So if you fancy a sit down with the likes of Adam Hills, Tom Allen, Anna Waddingham, Phil Tufnell, James Acaster, Ed Gamble, Daisy May Cooper, and tons more. And join me every Tuesday and Friday. Search White Wine Question Time in your podcast app to subscribe and listen now. White Wine Question Time is a Stack production.
Join Luke Moore and me, Pete Donaldson, for an unplanned half hour where we discuss life's great mysteries like, can a man survive by eating roadkill, as well as the week's most bizarre news stories and your ridiculous adventures, like this one about an almost catastrophic shortcut.
We eventually came to a large railed fence, which I decided we should climb. I scaled the 15-foot-ish fence, and as I was sat atop, ready to jump down, three or four police came running from a little building we hadn't noticed before shouting at me and grabbing my mate Sam. I was faced with the choice of legging it onto the other side of the fence or gallantly going back to help my friend. I returned to Sam, and the quite pissed off police and my gallantry was rewarded as they advised me that I had been climbing into the zoo and would have landed in an animal enclosure.
Listen to the Luke and Pete Show wherever you get your podcasts. New episodes every Monday and Thursday.
The Luke and Pete Show is a Stack production and part of the Acast Creator Network.
Of course, in this round of 16, there's another great, well, we hoped it would be a great tie, but another great match, I should say. Can we call it a great tie when one of the teams hammers the other team?
No, you can't.
Five goes to nil.
You can't.
Okay. Well, let me pack my bags and go home. Do you guys want to tell us what we can call it then?
Well, look, it's been a tough week for Sporting generally. You wondered after what happened domestically last weekend if Europe would be a bit of a break for them. But then again, playing Manchester City is never a break, is it? Now, of course, we had this email last week, didn't we, from Mattea, our listener.
Of course, yes.
About how he was taking his girlfriend to the Clásico.
Yes. Well, we've had another communication with him as well. He says, just wanted to say thank you so much for answering my question on OTC last week. What a game, eh? Because he went along with his missus, or his other half. We went for the pre-match Bifanas, just as Andy and Lars suggested, and we didn't regret that. Would they have regretted anything else?
No, no, because they weren't the ones scrapping on the pitch at the end. Yeah, Mattea sent me a picture, thank you very much, by the way, of a pint of Superbock looking very crisp and a Bifana next to it. And... yeah, I mean, it was a dramatic game. It was everything that it promised to be. Sporting took a 2-0 lead. If you haven't seen the goals, you've probably seen the punch-up, but not the goals. I would advise you to go back and look at particularly the second Sporting goal scored by Nuno Santos, which is the culmination of a quite incredible passing move, which tells you a lot about the philosophy of Ruben Amorim, who will come back to, a wonderful coach. But Porto came back. And they attacked. It's funny. The way that Manchester City played at Alvalade really made it clear that Pep Guardiola had seen the game on the Friday night, because Porto managed to get at Sporting through the wide areas. And that's what City did every single time. They looked vulnerable behind the sides of that back three. And I think that was always going to be an issue for them. The front half of Sporting, midfield, up front, there's a lot to love. Defensively, Gonçalo Inácio, I think, will go on to be a really good player. But, you know, they're not quite... Them and the goalkeeper, Adan, they've done a good job for them, but they're not quite that level. And I think that was always going to be a bit of a difficulty for them, as well as the fact we talked about players being rushed back, like Karim Benzema this week, for example. Pedro Gonçalves, their main goal scorer from midfield, the kind of de facto Bruno Fernandes replacement, even though he's a very different type of player, he looked not quite at it. His touch, you know, looked like a guy who'd been injured recently, basically. And you can't afford that against Manchester City. But the Manchester City result, I don't think there'll be a hangover in terms of the league and in terms of what they're trying to do. They're going in one direction. The Porto punch up, there will be repercussions, and there already are being repercussions, because as you'll have probably seen online, the 40 person brawl, not just the players, administrators, etc., etc., etc.
Stewards were getting involved as well.
Yeah,
I was laughing at some of the clips that went around after. Yeah, it was
well, of course,
I would expect the mascot to also get involved here if the stewards are getting involved.
Well, the thing with these guys in the suits, it takes them longer to run across. That's
got
the
a point.
Issue. You've got to get your head under your shoulder first as well. Of course, the centrepiece of it was celebrated, in inverted commas, as Pepe and Hugo Viana, the former Newcastle player and now sporting director of Sporting. They had a bit of a scrap. There was loads of other stuff. Pepe and Bruno Tabata of Sporting, who also shoved one of the admin team of Porto, one of the management team of Porto. They have both been provisionally suspended depending on a full investigation. As Marcus was saying on the ramble, they could potentially be suspended for up to 2 years. Whereas I think that's unlikely.
That would be harsh.
Because
I wouldn't even call it a punch up.
Yeah,
I think it was a bit of pushing and a bit of tickling.
There weren't a lot of actual punches.
Did you see handbags there?
It was pretty much that.
And it was interesting because Federico Verandes, the president of Sporting, filed a criminal complaint against Vitor Baia, who's on the board, the former goalkeeper of Porto, against the press officer, Rui Sequeira, and also against Sergio Conceição, the coach. Now, Conceição and Ruben Amorim seem to be acting rather as peacemakers, actually, on the pitch. Now, there was other stuff, apparently, that went on in the car park afterwards. Now we're getting into the realm of the big, just before Christmas 2009 dust-up between Benfica and Porto, where you had Hulk at the time and Christian Saponaro fighting with Benfica's stewards during the tunnel. And there are all sorts of inconclusive camera angles. They both ended up getting very long bans, Saponaro and Hulk. So there is precedent for this. But in the short term, the suspensions are going to affect Sporting more because João Palhinha was sent off. Sebastian Coates, their captain, was sent off. They're both suspended for the weekend.
Blast from the past, isn't it? Coates.
Isn't it just? Ricardo Esgaio, the defender, he got a fifth yellow card of the season, so he'll miss the game against Boavista at the weekend. And the main upshot of this game is Porto is still 6 points in front. Now, with 12 games left, no one has ever in the history of the Portuguese league overhauled a 6-point lead. Can you believe that? I mean, it's a big lead in any league. It's an absolute gulf in Portugal.
6-point leads never been overturned before in the entire history of the Portuguese leagues. But if anybody can, and you know, but we know that somebody can, could it be Amorim? I wonder, David.
Well, I think he's already done the most difficult thing, and that was Sporting going without a title for 18 years, was it?
Yeah.
Yeah. So 6 points might seem, you know, not much to him, I think, and considering all that he's done there, all of his work that he's done.
Do they need to just cut the idea of, you know, Champions League then to do that?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. I think they probably already had an idea coming into this tie.
They've overachieved anyway, getting this far.
Yeah, and it's funny, Amorim's rewards after... words after, he just said this tie was essentially a reward for the players and for all their work, what they've done, and that he wanted to give them a hug.
And I imagine for him as well, because he gave Pep Guardiola not a hug, but a very warm handshake. You could almost see him doffing his hat to Pep Guardiola.
And it's funnily, that action and his words after, I think some... him up really, really well, and why he's been so successful at Sporting. I think one of the key things that he has clearly done as a coach is build a relationship with his players, and I think they idolise him.
he always says the right thing as well.
Yeah.
The fans love him. The fans look forward to his press conferences more than they look forward to the matches sometimes.
They must love him.
But he does it by having a totally opposite approach to Mourinho. Of course, a lot was made of the fact that he said Mourinho was a model for him before the start of the game. He was always going to say that. I mean, he's Portuguese and he's in Portugal. I mean, he was clearly going to say that. But in terms of the way he communicates, he's so honest. They're not words for headlines. Yeah. And I think that's really important. Fans respect that. Players respect that. And, you know, he's been brave. He's been daring. Maybe a little bit too daring in the way they played against Manchester City. Because every time they conceded a goal, they just...
It didn't look good.
They went back and attacked the game like they still believed they could get something out of it.
I really, really admire that thought, though.
Yeah,
I think he'll look at the golfing clash and say, okay, what have I got to lose? We could play it out or not, but we could play it out like a different way and go back and everything that has got us to this point.
Fair enough.
Play to your strengths and to what you guys know.
You still lose 3-0 anyway.
Yeah, exactly. So why not? And yeah, I don't think it'll be, I know it was a heavy loss and some would say it was humiliating, but I don't think they'll be disheartened by it.
It's a heavy loss, but nobody's calling for his head, are they?
No, and they shouldn't be. The difference in resource is absolutely incredible. And as David said, he's overachieved at every level. You know, they weren't even third favourites to win the title that they won last season. It was remarkable. You know, the first time they won the title since the days that Cristiano Ronaldo and Ricardo Quaresma were doing ball tricks in training every day. You know, it is.
I remember you telling us that.
It's astonishing.
One new trick a day.
One new trick a day.
Remember, you can always get in touch with us here at OTC, at Football Ramble, at Dotson Adebayo, at Andy Brassel, and at David Jacka RR. Handles. This question from Dan. He says, following their loss last night, how do Inter rebuild such an aging squad to compete in Europe? That's a strong question, you know.
It is. And I think sometimes we can put the result ahead of the actual content of the game. I thought Inter were pretty good for a lot of that game. Liverpool, I thought, played it well as well, in that they defended very well in the bits that they needed to. And then, of course, their two efforts on target ended up being goals. But I don't think Inter need to be disheartened at all.
You don't see a gulf between Liverpool and Inter in that?
There is a little gulf, but not an enormous one. And Inter made light of that for most of the night, largely due to Inzaghi's excellent coaching.
I think if they had a different striker up front other than Dzeko, say Lukaku was still there, I think they might have scored less.
100%. I said this on the ramble earlier, the sort of service that Dzeko was getting was not very Dzeko compatible.
Yeah.
It was very Lukaku compatible, definitely. Mm-hmm. He would have lapped it up, I think. And it's the first time, and this is a tribute to Inzaghi, really, the first time this season, as I said earlier, that I feel that they've really missed Lukaku in that game, because he would have made an enormous difference. But, you know, there are other pieces that I think are good for the future. They've already got a new goalkeeper. I mean, Handanovic has been magnificent over the years, but Andre Onana from Cameroon, having left Ajax, leaving Ajax in the summer, he'll be signing for Inter. He'll be a great goalkeeper for them for the next 10 years. I think you look at Bastoni in defence, who is an absolute prince of a centre-back. He's magnificent. The re-signing of Marcelo Brozovic to map it all out from the base of the midfield. Lautaro looks like he's happy to stay there for a while. They need to make a few little tweaks, but I kind of feel like they're going in the right direction. It's just that moment that when Arturo Vidal is playing, you think, God, this team's old. I think that's part of it. And of course, he stepped in and did okay. They are going to miss Barella over these two games. And for that ridiculous, ridiculous red card that he picked up in Madrid when they'd already qualified. Mm. So daft.
This is for you, David, from Jamie. How has Kike Sanchez Flores turned Getafe around since his appointment?
Two clear things. Kike, as a coach, whenever he comes into a club, the first thing that he does is set up structure, shape, organisation as his main target for a team. He likes to make them hard to beat straight away. Mm. He'll be very, very rigorous with his defensive exercises in terms of getting men behind the ball and just not letting teams play through you or penetrate you. So that's first and foremost. He does that really, really well. I don't think he's an amazing coach, but if there's anything he does well, it is that, get that idea of structure and shape across. And secondly, Getafe's president, Ángel Torres, has got a lot of friends in Spanish football in terms of agents, in terms of contacts and such. Now, the caliber of players that they were able to attract in January, no other club should have been able to do. Borja Mayoral, Gonzalo Villar, Oscar Rodriguez. These are players that that Ángel Torres has contacts with and such, and this is why that they'll be able to get those caliber of players in. Other clubs, Levante, Alaves, the teams that they're up against down at the bottom, they're not able to get those players in. So that's been a big, big boost as well. And Getafe always do this really well. They can attract players because of Torres, who's got a lot of good contacts in the game, and I think that's what's helped them massively here.
Hey, it's time for both of you to recommend a game of the week for us each, and there are a lot of games out there at the moment. Andy, do you fancy taking the first lunge at this?
Yeah, the game of the week for me is going to be in Italy, because I'm going to the Olimpico for the first time.
Oh wow!
I'm going to see Roma play Verona, mainly because my younger son is a big fan of Roma.
And also because of Romeo and Juliet, two households both alike in dignity in fair Verona. Let me do that again. And also because of Shakespeare, because let's face it, in fair Verona, this is a prologue in case you don't know, of Romeo and Juliet. In fair Verona, let me do it one more time. And also because of Romeo and Juliet, because as you know, in the prologue to Romeo and Juliet, it begins, two households both alike in dignity in fair Verona, where we lay our scene.
I think the question is, will it be a Shakespearean tragedy for Jose Mourinho? Because they're under pressure at the moment. He's been very publicly critical of his players. Interested to see what the atmosphere will be like. And also interested to see who flips out first when it goes wrong. Will it be Jose Mourinho? Will it be my 8-year-old? I'd probably go for Mourinho.
I'd go for him in terms of McHugh show when he says, "A plague on both your houses. They made worms meat out of me." And what are you going to eat with it?
Well, you know, it depends what's available. Obviously, I'm hoping for good pizza at various stages in Rome. But
yeah,
look, Romans, get in touch. If you've got any tips.
By the way, not in the way that Mark Antony said, "Get in touch," in Julius Caesar. He simply said, "Friends, Romans, countrymen, just lend me your ears." Not your years. You obviously have got a great suggestion for a game of the week that has no way is going to enable me to quote Shakespeare.
Absolutely not.
That's your challenge.
My game's Sunday, 8 p.m. It's the Basque Derby. It's like Athletic Bilbao versus Real Sociedad.
Yeah, we've done this Basque Derby before, but remind us, why is this an important game, Biggie?
The Basque region's a very, very special region of Spain. And this derby's very, very special in the fact that, you know, it's not your typical derby full of animosity and fireworks. It's one where a lot of families and friends come together. They might have a friend who supports the other team and they'll watch it together. The camera will pan around the stadium and you'll see an Athletic fan next to a Real Sociedad fan. Aww. And it's like that. It's an interesting one. It's an interesting dynamic. And it's a time when I think Basque football is in a really, really good place as well. You got both teams fighting at the top of La Liga. You got both teams under good coaches, both teams with a lot of very, very exciting young players. And it's just a really, really nice thing to see, I think, to see Basque football on top. So
you've got some family fare for us to enjoy together as a family?
Empanadas.
What's that?
Yeah, it's like a South American pasty, basically. If Greg's added a bit of spice to one of their their pasties and such, and put some onion in there, a little bit of egg in there,
don't
then a bit of spice.
Give them the idea. Let's there just do it. You and I. This time next year, we'll be billionaires.
This was a Stack production and part of the Acast Creative Network.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
I'm Kate Thornton. Join me every week on White Wine Question Time, the podcast that asks famous faces three thought-provoking questions over three glasses of wine.
It's very rare to be introduced with such a thorough introduction, and it's kind of lovely to listen to all that and go, yeah, I've had a good life, right?
You really have.
How did you find that?
I can't even remember. Yeah, you do your research, Kate, man. I'll tell you that.
Do you know what? You are the only person ever, no other journalist has ever made that connection.
Wow, what a great question.
And receives some truly memorable answers.
And Tom Cruise came and Nicole Kidman. I go to him, listen, before you go, Tom, I just want you to know, if you fancy a foursome, I'm up for it and I know Anne-Marie doesn't mind.
When I first dated my now husband, I joined a gym for, I'm going to say, £1,000 a year, just so I could go off and have a poo.
Actually, I got heckled once in Wales, and there was a bloke at the bar on crutches, and he actually said to me, I'd rather fall over than listen to this shit, and he threw his crutches at me and fell over. Can you believe that?
I've got some cat's ashes, I don't know who they are.
You've been catfished by your own cat.
Exactly, seriously, man.
Dad, have you thought about putting in a breakfast nook? And my dad would say something like that. Have you thought about getting your own fucking house?
How did you give a duck an orgasm, Craig?
It's good with them, you know. And then we're way around the duck.
So if you fancy a sit-down with the likes of Adam Hills, Tom Allen, Hannah Waddingham, Phil Tufnell, James Acaster and Ed Gamble, Daisy May Cooper and tons more, then join me every Tuesday and Friday. Search White Wine Question Time in your podcast app to subscribe and listen now. White Wine Question Time is a Stack production.